The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 58. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, it is illegal to open a soda bottle without the supervision of a licensed engineer. Beer it is, then. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Sherry, and whether you're totally new to the podcast or you've been listening since before I knew what podcast even meant, I want to thank you for joining us today and for making us the number one rated travel podcast on iTunes. We are on day number 4 of podcast gluttony, and if you're unsure what that means, for the entire month of September, we are releasing a podcast every single weekday, Monday through Friday. That's right, 5 episodes a week instead of our traditional once a week. And instead of all interviews, we'll be doing 3 types of other shows as well, including a top 10 show where we discuss our top 10 favorite things in different travel-related categories, a destination diary series where we highlight a specific place we've been and give you the real lowdown on what it's like, where to eat, where to sleep, and what to do, and also a reader questions show where we answer your specific questions. So if you have a question, any question at all regarding travel, a specific place you want to go, or location independence, shoot me an email at trav@extrapackofpeanuts.com and put podcast question in the subject line, and it might just get answered on the podcast. And of course, we've still got our amazing interviews with incredible guests, including today's show with Sasha Martin. For the past 4 years, Sasha has undertaken an incredible quest to cook a meal from every single country in the world, all 193. But not only does she cook a meal each week from every single country, she actually delves deep into that country's history and its food and what it all means for the culture of that country. She really has brought the world to her table, and she'll talk about why she did this, some of her favorite foods, the reactions from others, and she's also going to give us our very first listener challenge, which we're calling Epop Cooks. So make sure you listen all the way through, and please, I'd love if everyone participated in this challenge. I'm absolutely awful in the kitchen, and I'm going to be giving it a go and showing you the results, so you know you can't be any worse than me. At the end of the show, I'll tell you how to take part in the Epop Cooks Challenge, and I can't wait to see and taste the results. Here's my interview with Sasha. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is someone who spent 3.5 years cooking meals from every country in the world and whose website always leaves my mouth watering, Sasha Martin of GlobalTableAdventure.com. Sasha, thanks so much for coming on the show and welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Travis.
Sasha, I must say, when I first heard about your story as someone who loves to eat and loves to try new foods, I fell in love with the site right away. And for people unfamiliar with Global Table Adventure, can you give us some of the background on what it is and how this idea to cook a meal from every country in the world over the span of, 196 weeks, how did that come about?
Yeah, so basically my daughter was 6 months old and she was just starting out on solid food. I was kind of in this weird place of motherhood where I was not sleeping a lot and I was starting to think about what she would grow up eating and also my experiences traveling as a youngster. I had been to 12 countries before I turned 19, and I thought, wow, I'd really love her to have some of those experiences. But I knew she, as a little baby, she wasn't going to remember if I took her to Italy. That was something I thought, well, I'd rather wait until she can remember it. My husband was really, really picky, and I thought, man, if we're trying to feed her some interesting food and he's picky and we can't travel, what is her life going to be like? I want to have an impact. And I knew that whatever you feed your child as a baby actually does impact them for their life. There's scientific studies that talk about that sort of thing. So anyway, I was up late one night and I was sort of restless, couldn't sleep. And I the idea came to me, man, I should cook a meal from every country in the world, because that would be the perfect way to get my picky husband to think of it as a game and have it be fun. And we'd have that experience of traveling and learning about new countries and things we'd, you know, culture, without actually leaving and having to spend that money that we really didn't have at the time. And then my daughter would have that experience of trying new foods. So that's the background.
And isn't it always funny? You know, it's usually late at night when these ideas pop into your brain, like, well, I should just do this. And when you first had the idea, you know, I'm sure you're like, this is a great idea, like an epiphany. Oh, this is perfect. It fits right into what we're trying to do. After that then crystallized a little bit and you started to think about it logically, did you think you'd be able to complete it? And then was it easier or harder than you first imagined? Because it's a 3.5 year thing. And I think that's what people need to realize. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to cook a thing from every country in the world, boom, 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 every day. I mean, you said it's going to be 1 week and it's going to be over basically 3.5 years.
You know, it's really funny. I was about 3 months into the project, so about 12 countries. And I was thinking like, wow, this is a marathon of all marathons. And I was thinking about the drive to my mother-in-law's house, which takes 3 hours. And I was just in this really weird mood. And I did the math. And I was like, okay, if every country, so 60, 120, 180 minutes to drive to my mother-in-law's, right? And that's almost about what a country, you know, 195, 196 countries. So each country is less than a minute. 12 countries in, I'm 12 minutes into the 3 hour drive. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a really long adventure. So what I had to do is I had to take my mind off that end goal, honestly. And I had to say, okay, what am I cooking this week? It just made it so much easier for me to keep moving because I could focus on one country at a time. That was okay. It just becomes overwhelming when you look at your goal, you know, of the big picture. That's really hard. And I think if people can make measurable, attainable goals, that's really the way to go.
Yeah, excellent point, because I think most people with these huge goals and people who've come on this podcast and just anyone who has these epic goals always says you can't focus on the finish line, because if you do, it's going to feel insurmountable. It's going to be like, I'm only this far in. Like, are you kidding me? You know, this has been so much work. But if you say, okay, well, what am I doing this week? Let's get through that. Okay, what am I doing next week? And all of a sudden it just kind of goes, right? And you just find yourself doing it. Instead of focusing on the end, you're just focusing on that moment. And you're really getting more enjoyment out of it then too, because you're throwing yourself into that moment as opposed to saying, oh, well, you know, at the end, how are we going to celebrate or something like that?
Yeah, well, and I think also at the end is always sort of a letdown, I think, because really the fun is that journey. And it did take a little while for me to realize, like, you know, happiness is never later, it's now. So what am I going to do with now? You know, seeing my daughter try, you know, her first spicy food or actually, for example, sushi. She had no interest in sushi. And she was about 2 years old when we finally got to cooking Japan. I made the sushi rice. We had it all out with our little rolling mats. I cut up like cucumbers and avocados and all these things that she loves. And we did veggie sushi. She picked what she wanted to put in there. She rolled it up. I cut it, and I could not even grab my camera fast enough before she shoved a whole piece of sushi in her little 2-year-old mouth. And she really turned up her nose before that. But it was just so fun to see her experience that cooking and that joy and of that culture, because she'd helped me make it, you know.
And that's incredible, because my mom is now, she's going to kill me for saying this, her age, but she's 58 and she just tried sushi last year. So your daughter's got a 56 year head start on her then.
Yeah.
One of the things that amazes me about your site is that you didn't just cook up a dish and then post a picture of it each week and be like, okay, boom, Italy's done. Okay, Ghana's done. You know, here's what I cooked. Instead, each week you really dove into a country and had a whole posting schedule that came out, basically one post every weekday, Monday through Friday, about that country. Can you share how that worked and why you did it that way? Because it must have been much more work than simply, all right, I'm going to make a recipe, I'm going to like post a picture as proof of the recipe, and that's it.
Yeah, it was a tremendous amount of work and it was crazy. I always like to say that I did it in the cracks and crevices of motherhood. I mean, I was like up late at night and before my daughter woke up. But the reason I wanted to do that schedule is I really did want to have it be a resource for other people. And I also wanted to, I have a really poor memory. And so I kind of wanted to commit to digital memory, everything we experienced. And so I thought if I put a little bit about the country in terms of like their culture, all these different things, if I share all that in one place, it would not just benefit me and my poor memory, but other people who could then come and cook the world too. And that's something that I'm looking forward to doing now is how can I encourage more people to do what we did? Maybe they're not going to cook all of the world's countries, but maybe they'll try, you know, cooking a recipe from a country they've never heard of. They'll just go through the list and be like, oh, what's that? Let's see what they eat. But I think it's a way to bring cultures together for sure. Because we all have food in common.
Yeah, it's very true. We all do have food in common. I think a lot of the reason that people travel, I know myself, is I really enjoy eating the foods of other countries. And like, that's usually some of the memories, the most distinct memories I have of, you know, when I was in Malaysia and I was trying, you know, nasi lemak for the first time and was just like blown away by this street cart. Like, how can something so good come from something so grubby looking and things like that? What was your schedule? Because you did a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday post. So for people who are like, okay, that sounds really cool. I want to learn more about the country and I really want to dive into it. What can they expect when they come to your site and, you know, with the days of the week and how you laid it out?
Well, what they would want to do is they would probably go to the interactive map link, or there's also a visual Eat the World, you know, the countries I've cooked map, and you click into there. And then from there, you have where you can click in, there's the map. So you can just browse Africa and just see what you want, what country you want to click into. Or you can go below that and there's an alphabetical list of every country. So say you click Afghanistan, that will show you every post I ever did on Afghanistan. And so like Monday was about the food. It's a general overview. Travel Tuesday was a general overview. And then Wednesday I'd present the menu. From then on, it would be recipes. So I always shared. And in the beginning, I did a lot more recipes. I was very ambitious. But then I decided, you know, I think for Afghanistan, I did 7 recipes. I was like totally crazy to cook, photograph, and write about 7 recipes in 1 week, in addition to the overview. It was just nuts. And so I realized to have actual quality, I had to ratchet that back a little. But so anyway, there's a selection of recipes for every country. And then I would have a meal review. You know, it was never the goal to judge a country's food. It was more just to say like, here's what happened. And I'd have usually a little anecdote of our experience and then a video of my little girl trying the food. And that was always really fun. A lot of parents especially like to show that to their kids. It just encourages people that, look, just let your kid try it. See what's going to happen. Here's one way that a child might react. So.
And where did you find your recipes? Because I imagine it must be fairly hard to find recipes for countries like, you know, Burkina Faso or Tuvalu or whatever. Like, where did you get your recipes from?
Yeah, it is really hard. You're right. So I wore out my library card for starters. There was a cookbook at the library called The World Cookbook for Students, and it's a reference book that has recipes from every country in the world, plus territories and that sort of thing. But it was a reference book. I couldn't check it out of the library. So I actually ended up buying this book for like $250. And that was my starting point. And it was really like an encyclopedia. So from there, it would not just gave you a few recipes, but it talked about the food in general. So I could say, oh, that sounds interesting. Let me look for this other recipe that they didn't actually provide. And then I would go online. And what I would do is I would look for people that were usually either volunteers in another country and they had like a personal blog, or actually like the Peace Corps or something like that, or somebody who was an expat who actually had moved to this country and they had a blog. And generally those people, I could tell by the quality of their writing if they were really experiencing local food or if they were just showing like McDonald's in Tuvalu, right? I would then email those people. I got really good at reaching out and finding these people and got some great ideas from them, things I would have never even, that were not in that encyclopedia, you know, because they had that firsthand contact with the country. So yeah, I took it really, the research was really something I took seriously because I felt like here I am representing this country. I want to do them right. You know, I don't want to get it wrong. So yeah. And in fact, a funny story about that, So Australia, I did many different dishes, but one of them I did was like kangaroo kebabs. And I had two different people commenting on this recipe or somewhere in the blog commenting about it, saying, one said, "Oh my gosh, that's disgusting. I would never, ever, ever eat kangaroo. That's kept over by the cat food. How could you put this on your blog?" And then somebody else who was like, I'm from Australia. I love kangaroo. I eat it all the time. I'm so glad you put this here. You know, it was really funny. And I thought, you know, this must be like deer in the United States. You know, it's just so, you know, I was very relieved to see that second person come on and say it is something, in fact, that we do eat. So.
Well, I have eaten kangaroo in Australia twice. So I was not eating dog food as well. So I think, you know, it was at a restaurant and I've actually eaten kangaroo here in the States as well. So,
yeah, it's good, I think, right?
I think you're okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Yeah, for sure. I really love the fact that you do put on the whole, you know, the whole week with the country, and it's cool to have the recipes, but I love, you know, from my point of view, I love like reading about the food and the culture. So if you guys are interested in that, you know, even if you're not a cook or you don't even really care about cooking, but you want to get an idea of, okay, when I go to this country or when I travel here, here's maybe what I should start looking for. You have a great overview, Sasha, of kind of like, here's the generalities about the food in this country. Here's what people eat. Here's maybe what you should try. So you can take that as well. Even if you're like, I'm not going to cook myself. I'm going to go here and experience it. You can also do that. So really, really neat stuff. And the cool thing about this project is that so many times we think like, I've got to go there. I've got to see that. And we make travel about us going somewhere, but you found a way to bring it to you in a sense. And we're not being able to like, go to the country and things like that, or some people aren't able to travel as much as they wanted. That was one of the reasons you took on this project. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because I think a lot of people listening are like, yeah, I'd love to go to 196 countries, but there's no way that I'm going to be able to do it, but I want to experience it. And you've been able to do that. Bring it to your family, bring it to your, you know, your daughter who's very young, and for yourself as well, been able to delve into these countries. Why did you decide to do that?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's just one of the big reasons is wanting to sort of present something a little more positive to my daughter, right? Because one of the beautiful things about travel is that you can go there and see firsthand that they're people too, right? Like we're all human. There's not this big idea of the other. I'm really not into that concept. And one of the things I noticed is I don't have TV anymore. I just do Netflix. But when I did, back when I made this decision, whenever the news was on, right, it was like, this country is the poster child for poverty, or this country is the poster child for the latest war. And it was like, people became so hedged into these boxes. Right. And I felt like, okay, what can I do without traveling to bring the sense of like our global neighborhood, right, our global community to my family? And so, I don't know, I think really, especially when you can't travel and you're feeling a little bit in the rut, in that mundane. So the big idea is the peace thing, but then the small idea is just making dinner time fun, right? Spicing up dinner time. Like one of the things I have going on my website here recently is Around the World with Corn. Most of my life I had grilled corn and it had some butter on it and that was it. But I have 20 recipes with corn on it from, you know, several from Africa. I have this amazing Somalian corn that is, it's like stewed in this curry of, it's turmeric, coconut milk, tomato sauce, and onion. And it makes this really pale, like kind of orangey sauce. And it gives this incredible flavor. And you cut the corn up into like maybe two or three pieces, the cob. And so you can serve this at a potluck. And it's just like, you know, it's vegan, it's interesting, but it's not totally crazy. And it's from Somalia. Like, how fun is that? So I think that's a big part of it too, is just, you know, we're here living our ordinary lives. Let's spice it up a little.
Yeah, very cool. Because like you said, and in your bio on the site, you know, you say you're from the middle of middle America. You're in Tulsa, right?
Yeah, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, so, you know, you're in the, you know, this normal, regular town with a normal, regular life. And you said, I'm going to go out and do something. And, you know, we're talking about cooking here, and that's one way to do it. But there's so many ways, too, to bring travel to you and bring culture to you, whether that's, you know, inviting travelers into your home to tell their stories, or even just going out, even, you know, in Tulsa, in any basically city that you are in America, there's always these meetups going on. You can find them on Couchsurfing or all these different websites of people who are just travelers or people who are coming to America from other countries. And it's like, you can go outside your comfort zone a little bit while still being in your hometown.
You know, that's a really good point, because one of the things I'm not from Tulsa, and I had traveled extensively as a youngster. And one of the things that when I moved here in 2005, and I was like, man, this is, there's not a lot of culture here. And I was feeling kind of down about, how many plane stopovers would it take to actually get out of the country? Like, this is really tough. When I started cooking the world, I soon found, not only is there this one Asian market that everybody knows about, but then, there's a couple of Indian markets, and then there's the Hispanic markets. And then there's an African market less than 2 miles from my house with things like fermented locust beans, which taste like blue cheese. And I realized that part of my issues were, it's my own fault that I didn't see the culture that was all around me. Yes, I might not be able to hear 20 languages all at once, but there was a very powerful international community here. In fact, I would say in some senses more powerful, because there's fewer of them. So they have to be really strong and united and help and reach out to each other. So the community is really great. So yeah, I mean, cooking world doesn't just change how you see outside of your own community, but also how you see your own community. And things would happen too. Really strange connections, which always amazed me. One time I was sitting at my dining room table and I had all my books out and I was like, okay, Bulgaria's next week. What am I going to cook for Bulgaria? And the doorbell rings. And I swear to you, my mom was visiting and she opened the door. She like brings in this man, this really tall man. And I'm like, oh, why did she bring this? I don't know this man. Why is he in my house? She's like, Sasha, this is Nick from Bulgaria. And I was like, what? Hold on. And he was selling books door to door. It was his summer job. For some reason, he was in Tulsa. And I said, all right, come here. Come sit at my dining table. We're going to talk about, I said, look, I'm trying to figure out what to make and help me out. So he did. He helped me for 30 minutes. He told me a lot of things. And the food was so much better because of his personal touch. And then another time, I was at the library with my daughter. There was like a play group. And a woman was there. We were talking. She was going on saying something about international culture and she's part of this one thing and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, yeah, you like international stuff? Well, I'm cooking food from Finland today, actually. I just went shopping yesterday. I'm cooking food from Finland. And she goes, oh, really? She said, I'm half Finnish. I said, no way. So she's half Finnish, half Sri Lankan. So anyway, she ended up, yeah, it was a really
That's an interesting mix. Yeah.
Yeah. So she went ahead and actually came back to my house with her daughter and husband, and that afternoon helped me cook the food from Finland. And it was amazing. It was, again, so much better because of her help. So yeah, it's there's a little bit of serendipity, but it's kind of like learning a new word. You hear something, you learn a new word, and you start hearing it everywhere,
So. Yeah, it's so true. When you open yourself up to have these experiences, you don't even really know you're doing it. When you started, you probably thought, okay, my little family's going to eat a meal around the world every week. And, it's going to be our project. But so many people come onto this show and they say, this was my dream, my goal, my project. And yet so many people then come around it. And, the world, like your goal spreads out and you touch people in ways that you don't know. And then people come in from the outside world that you would not have met. If you weren't doing this project, you never would have invited Nick in. Right. And it's crazy how, like you said, these serendipitous things happen, but it's because you're opening yourself up just by doing something different and saying, I'm going to do this and it's going to be a little kooky and it's going to be really fun. And you really just get to see the world in a different way, little by little, even if you are staying in your hometown. And I have to ask you this question. I know it might be a little like asking a mother to choose her favorite child, but now that you've cooked food from every country, what are a few of your favorites? Are there ones that you were just saying like, man, this was so good, or even just so much better than I thought? And then, we'll turn that around a little bit and go with the flip side of maybe some that you didn't enjoy as much. But what were some of your favorite either countries that you cooked or just foods that you cooked that you thought, This is phenomenal.
Oh, that's a great question. It totally is like asking a mother to pick her favorite child. I kind of look at it from the point of view of the less I knew about a country, the more I enjoyed cooking it, because I felt like there's people on the other side of the planet that I know nothing about. I really don't even know that they exist in some ways. And now here I am trying this thing. I mean, it could be as simple as Nauru, the tiny island nation. It's not even an incredible dish, but they drink iced coffee like crazy. And they drink it not out of mugs when you go to the vendor. They sell it in recycled plastic water bottles, or, you know, when you go to Whole Foods or something and you get food from the bulk in those little plastic tubs. They put the iced coffee in that and they sell it that way. And the reason is because they're such a small island that the recycling is a real issue. And so even like a professional street vendor will be selling stuff in used water bottles. And I just thought that was so interesting. And it wasn't like this huge culinary thing, but it, you know, we went ahead and made iced coffee and put it in recycled water bottles. And my husband and I drank it, you know, my daughter, I don't know what we put in hers. It wasn't coffee though. That's been really interesting. I think also very interesting to me for a similar reason was the food of sub-Saharan Africa, because really one of the things that I feel like, you know, is tough and challenging in the world of food is that we really only hear, I mean, it's getting better, but most of the food out there, it's like, let's talk about French cooking. Let's talk about China. Let's talk about these really big hitter countries, I call them. But the world of food, like, food in sub-Saharan Africa almost doesn't exist except to a very small community of cookbook authors. And so generally you're talking Morocco if you're talking about African cuisine. And so I really loved digging into the food below the desert. I don't know. There's just something like, for example, in West Africa, there's groundnut stew, which is a peanut stew. It had like some hot chili in it and it had the chicken and it had peanuts are called groundnuts. So it had like the peanut sauce in there and it was just amazing and so flavorful. And I thought, man, what a crime that more people don't know about this dish. So that was really fun.
Yeah. So finding those kind of hidden gems, right? Like you said, it's always the big countries here about like, I'm going to eat Italian or Mexican or, you know, what have you. But everyone eats around the world, right? And so everyone has some sort of either signature dish or something that they eat traditionally. And it's really cool that then you had to work to uncover them. And it probably made the food better, you know, because you've worked to kind of figure out what it is that they eat.
Yeah. And just seeing like the funny things they do, like, okay, there's a country called Lesotho in Southern Africa. In their big cities, you know, where you can get espresso, for example, they actually put rooibos tea in the espresso machines. So rooibos is a caffeine-free tea that when you make it really, really strong, does not get bitter. It becomes bright, bright red, or kind of like a deep, bold color. And so they'll run it, this fine grind tea, through an espresso machine, and then they'll add steamed milk to it. And that's like, you know, their version of Starbucks. And I'm like, this is incredible. Totally. So like, I make those all the time now.
Yeah, it's become part of your daily, well, maybe not daily, but a traditional thing that you'll have in your house now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Very cool.
And I think, well, I just wanted to say that's something too, that the idea, so I call it Global Table Adventure. It took maybe 2 years, I would say, before it started happening. But about 2 years in, I realized that the idea of the Global Table wasn't just to try food from, you know, Lesotho. It was actually having food from a lot of different countries in one meal. And that's really interesting. You know, if you can have, you have your Greek salad and then maybe you have that groundnut stew and then you have, you know, for dessert, something from somewhere totally different. That's really fun. Food actually goes really well together, even when it's not from a similar culture. I think you can make some interesting combinations there.
Yeah, very cool. As you were saying that, I actually just had a thought. And at the end of the show, I was going to say, hey, you know, it'd be cool if you picked out a recipe and I would make it and then I'd share my, you know, success or failure with that. But actually, I think it'd be really cool if we did some sort of listener challenge. I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but if there's a way, you know, I'll have you give us a recipe right now. And I think it'd be really cool if I try to make it because, you know, I am not a good cook by any stretch. My wife does most of the cooking. She's phenomenal. I'm not. And I think it'd be cool if I try to make it. Anyone out there listening, it'd be awesome if you guys tried to make it as well. You know, and then you could send me a picture of it, you know, at trav@extrapackofpeanuts.com, or you can tweet me a picture at Pack of Peanuts, or you can put it on Instagram and tag me at Pack of Peanuts. But it'd be really neat to then get a collection of all these pictures and then post them up on the site. So I'll give any more instruction about that in the outro. So if you're listening, you want to do it, I'll come up with a really good way that we can do it. And I'll put them in the outro. But do you have a recipe that you would think would be really fun for a group of people to try, to all try making?
Here's an idea. The first idea I have is, it comes from Argentina. It's actually based off a recipe from a chef called Francis Malman. And it's a roasted pumpkin salad with arugula and goat cheese. And it's so easy. So what you're going to do is, it's super hot out, so you can do this on the grill. You're going to take an acorn squash. You're going to cut it in half. And you're going to brush it with olive oil, salt, and pepper. And you're just going to roast the heck out of it longer than you think, because I think acorn squash gets really kind of, the flavor deepens and becomes so great when it's cooked, I would say maybe 45 minutes at a nice hot temperature. And then you're going to, when it's all done cooking, fork tender, you're going to put in the cavity of your acorn squash some baby arugula. Then you're going to crumble on there the, preferably some aged goat cheese, but you can use any goat cheese you want. And then if you have, for bonus points, you can make the salad dressing that they use, which is oregano, mint, and then like, you know, your vinegar and oil. And then it's going to be steaming hot with your, with the cheese is going to start to melt. And you're going to take your fork and you're going to mash that arugula and goat cheese into the acorn squash. And then you're going to eat it and you're going to thank me.
All right. Well, that sounds perfect. That's what we'll be doing. We'll be doing the acorn squash blue cheese. And that was one of the things that you made from Argentina, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we will link that in the show notes, guys. If you're up for the challenge, please, you're probably a much better cook than me. So I implore you, go try it out. Send me your pictures. Again, in the outro, I'll kind of give you more details about how we can do that. And then we'll get them all to you, Sasha, and you can take a look, see how we did. And that would be a really, really cool project for anyone listening.
Awesome. Sounds great.
And I do believe you said you did make a Guinness cake, right? So like, let's say we eat this acorn squash salad. We're like, oh, that's fantastic. I need to top it off with dessert. What should we do as a listener challenge if someone's really ambitious to then do for dessert?
Well, by far, the hands down best, most loved recipe on my site is the Guinness chocolate cake with Bailey's buttercream that I made when I cooked Ireland. And it's actually kind of fun as far as cakes go, because it's a dump and mix thing. So even the, you know, the most basic of cooks can do it. You're going to add, you know, your Guinness and cocoa powder and different things into a pot, mix it up, pour it into your cake pan and bake it. And then the buttercream is just butter, powdered sugar, and Bailey's. And so it's like as easy as it gets, and it tastes amazing. I also, just this last year, came up with a way to bake the cake in a can, like a can of beans can. You clean it out, you pour your cake batter in, and you bake it, and it comes out in a cylinder. You can put that in a beer mug and then top it with your frosting, and it actually looks like a Guinness. So it's really, really fun.
Wow. All right. Is that linked on the blog as well then?
Uh-huh.
All yeah. right. So we will be getting those two recipes to you guys, the acorn squash blue cheese arugula salad, as well as the Guinness cake.
Acorn squash goat cheese salad.
Goat cheese. Sorry. Goat cheese salad. Yeah. See, I'm already, this is why I'm not a good cook. I don't pay enough attention. And the Guinness cake. And if you really want to make it special, take her, Sasha's advice, put it in a beer mug. That would be really cool. Again, guys, that would be so much fun to have you do as a group here. And then we can send our stuff to Sasha. She can kind of peruse it and see how we did. Speaking of traveling now, because now you have our mouths watering, we'll bring it back to travel a little bit. You've done a fair bit of it yourself. You said you did a lot before you were 19. And we love to teach people how to travel more, spend less here on the Extra Pack Peanuts Travel Podcast. What were some of the best tips you had for saving money while traveling? I know when before you were 19, you were probably going, you know, with your guardians, things like that. But was there, you know, advice you could give that you're like, all right, here's some of the stuff we did to save money?
Yeah, I mean, definitely going with family, you know, I would say renting a car, if you're, you know, as an adult, that's something that's really been a great way for me to see countries and experience them, as opposed to, or like taking public transportation, that kind of thing. But don't do the tour bus thing. Don't go with the herds. Go your own way. I mean, also, I remember one time I was in Mexico, this was as an adult as well. We went and we took our rental car to the local grocery store. And we bought like our $2 local breads, and we got a bottle of sangria and all these different things. And we took it back to our hotel and just tried everything out. And it was like so much cheaper than what they wanted to charge us at the hotel for their dinner. And it was so much more, I like to think it was more authentic, you know? So.
For sure. I just talked to a friend last night. He was asking me, you know, when you travel, you go to those countries, there's something you do in every country. And I said, you know what? This is going to sound crazy, but one of the things I like to do in every country that I'm in is go into the grocery store, because it's such a microcosm of like real life happening there. People are coming in, getting their groceries. You see things, you have no idea what they are. You know, you see people doing their normal everyday stuff. And I just find it so fascinating to be in a grocery store, especially when you're in these countries, like when you're in Japan or Thailand, like you don't have any clue. You can't read it. You don't know what's going on. And I've always found it fascinating. And then on top of that, of course, you know, it's much, much cheaper to then if you rent an apartment, or even if you have a hotel with a kitchenette, to go and make your food. And I will second the fact of renting a car, I think, is a phenomenal way to see an area, and also usually much cheaper if you're with a group or, you know, two or three people than kind of the other options. So renting a car, I love it. I driving around country is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, for sure.
One of my favorite questions to ask guests on the show is about their travel mistakes or mishaps, because everyone seems, you know, seasoned travelers, they have it all together, but the reality is much different than that. And as someone who's terrible in the kitchen, I'd love to hear some of your kitchen mishaps that occurred during those 196 weeks. Maybe you'd make me feel a little bit better about my ineptitude, especially when I go to make the salad and the cake, and I'm sure it'll turn out pretty, maybe not as pretty as what you've done. What are some of the mishaps you've had?
Well, so there's been a few challenging recipes for sure. One of the ones was from Costa Rica. I was trying to make this dulce de leche candy. So basically what you do is you take a can of sweetened condensed milk and you boil the heck out of it. And you boil it way past the point of making dulce de leche, which is kind of like a caramel sauce texture. And it becomes deep, dark brown, almost chocolate-like in color. The recipes I could find, that was what they told you to do. And then they said, then when you take it out of the can, you slice it up and then you put it in your wrapper and you have candy. Well, it always came out like mud and I couldn't figure out what was wrong. So I took this mud and I kind of forced it into a wrapper and I was like, man, this is terrible. I can't share this. I can't make this for the readers, and because they're going to have a hard time too. So anyway, in frustration, I'm not sure why, I threw it in the fridge. And of course, this little tiny piece of candy went way in the back of my fridge and I forgot about it for weeks. And then I was cleaning out my fridge and I found it. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's hard and it's candy now. Like, all I had to do was put it in the fridge. I don't know. It was just one of those moments where, you know, the comedy of errors, if I had somebody Costa Rican there helping me, then it would have been, the problem would have been avoided. But yeah, I just had to learn the hard way.
So how did it taste then? Was it good?
Oh yeah, it's sweet and very caramelly and very good. Yeah. Another time I was making Cambodian grilled eggs. It's very lengthy process to do this. So you have to like blow out your eggs into a bowl and then you whisk them up with like fish sauce, and you can use brown sugar or palm sugar and different things. You season it up and then you have to put it back in your eggs and then you steam them and then you grill them on skewers. So you have like literally an egg on a skewer. And so there was all kinds of room for error with that one. But what I learned was that it would boil over or the shells would crack if the temperature was too hot, or, you know, the moon was on the left this day. Like, it was just so hard. But I actually spent a lot of time getting it right. And I actually have that recipe in my book that's coming out. So that finally mastered that one 3.5 years later, it seems like.
Very cool. And a good segue into what we're going to get into now, because you just completed this mission in November of 2013. But I know that it's not really over. You haven't stopped posting on your site. You, like you said, you just did one that I read today about the 20 ways to eat corn. You know, it's continuing, even though you have completed all 196 countries. You've got some pretty cool stuff coming up. You just mentioned the book. what should people be looking out for with that, with the book and with the website going forward?
Right. Yeah, the book's really exciting. So back, I guess it was in the winter of 2012, 2013, I got a book deal with National Geographic. They really loved what I was doing. And I was so grateful to have signed with them because I felt like as a nonprofit and as people who are about promoting the same things I'm about promoting, it was just the perfect fit. And so I started writing my memoir. And about a week into the process, my editor was like, Sasha, there is so much more to this story than just some bored housewife cooking the world. You need to dig deeper. And I was like, oh man, don't make me dig deeper. But she did. And so I pushed through some really tough childhood memories. And, you know, one of the things that really was driving me beyond the fun story about a picky husband and a young daughter was that I myself was looking to find my place in the world and to feel some unconditional love. And I think we all have these times of loneliness and heartbreak and hardship. I spent time in foster homes and I moved in with another family when I was about 10, 11 years old, and they're the ones who took me overseas. And just things kept changing. You know, in my life, there was never like this unconditional sense of belonging. And so I think a lot of what Cooking the World was for me was finding that. And also, especially once I started a family, was doing it my way. You know, how was I going to make my daughter's experience different than the challenges I had? It was a tough year writing that book. There was a lot of tears. There was a lot of soul searching and a lot of reliving of memories. But ultimately, what came out of it was the story of my journey, what drove me to cook the world, cooking the world, how it affected my family, and then 29 recipes to go with that. And so that'll be out this spring, March of 2015. And actually, I do believe it's on Amazon now if anybody wanted to go check it out. They haven't filled in all the info yet, but it's The Spiced Life by Sasha Martin, not The Other Spiced Life, because there's another one out there. So
very cool. And we'll link that in the show notes, guys. So if you want to check that out, like Sasha said, you can pre-order it, I believe, and then March 2015 will be the actual release of the book.
Yeah. And so, and then for the website, you know, the continued journey, I realized for me, I did some soul searching, you know, you and I met at WDS, the World Domination Summit in Portland, Oregon. And one of the things that at that conference, I did some thinking about like, what is the future of what I'm doing? And it's all about the readers really, because it had such a profound impact on me cooking the world that I'm now looking for ways to encourage other people to cook the world. So whether or not it's pulling together 20 recipes for corn so that somebody who has some corn is looking for an idea can find an idea, or it's somebody who literally wants to go through and cook every single country in the world, I want to give them the tools and resources they need to make that happen in a really fun, meaningful way.
Yeah, and you do a fantastic job on the site. Like I said, there's so much information there, guys. I mean, really from the history of the country to the history of the food of the country to then the recipes. So, I mean, you can find yourself getting lost in the website in a good way. There's so much there. So if you guys are interested in it, I urge you go check it out. And Sasha, thanks so much for coming on the show. Thanks for your website. I can't wait to delve into a few of your recipes. We're definitely going to do the two that you mentioned. Hopefully the listeners will get on board with that. Although I probably won't do all 196. I think that might be a little more difficult for me than you because of my lack of cooking skills. But before I let you go, remind people how they can come connect with you, where they can find everything that you're doing.
Sure. Again, the website's globaltableadventure.com. I'm on Facebook / Global Table Adventure. I love Instagram. I use Instagram all the time. And I'm Global Table on Instagram. And I'm also Global Table on Twitter. So I'd love to connect. I'd love, you know, reach out to me, say hello, ask me your questions. I'd love to help you in any way that I can with your cooking adventures. So, and I hope to hear from some of you.
Yeah, and definitely share your pictures or your questions, as Sasha mentioned. That'd be really cool if you guys started sharing, listen to this and said, you know, I'm going to share my food pictures. Everyone takes pictures of their food nowadays. So start sharing with Sasha, start sharing with me. I'm at Pack of Peanuts. Sasha, thanks again for coming on. Hopefully someday I'll be able to get to taste some of your cooking firsthand.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love that.
Thank you so much, Sasha.
All right, bye-bye.
Wow, what an awesome and fun interview and an amazing story from Sasha. If you want to know more about Sasha, check out all the food she's cooked and try out some of the recipes, head on over to globaltableadventure.com, or you can go to the show notes for this podcast at www.extrapackofpants.com/epopcooks. That's EPOPCOOKS. Now, for the Epop Cooks Challenge and how it's going to work, and please, I implore everyone to give it a try. I think it'll be a great way for all of us to share in this together and have a fun experience. Sasha has given us two recipes, a roasted pumpkin salad with arugula from Argentina and a Guinness cake from Ireland. First, to get the recipes, head on over to the show notes for this episode, extrapackofpants.com/epopcooks. Then we'll give you until Friday, September 12th to try this recipe. So a whole week if you're listening live. Take a picture of your final product after you're done making it, or even a video of you eating it and trying it, and then get it to me one of the four following ways. You can tweet at Pack of Peanuts and at Global Table and use the hashtag EpopCooks. If you like Instagram, put it on Instagram, tag at Pack of Peanuts, at Global Table, and again, the hashtag EpopCooks. You can post it to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Facebook wall, or if you don't use social media at all, just send me a picture of it via email to trav@extrapackofpeanuts and put EpopCooks in the subject line. I'll collect all the images, all the videos that everyone sends me, put them together in a post, which we'll then put up on the site, and of course, give you credit and a shout out for doing it. And don't worry, I'll be doing it as well and documenting the whole process. And as scary as it sounds, I'll actually be eating what I make. So no need to be embarrassed, because it can't be worse than what I'll be doing. So please, I ask you guys, if you're listening, this is a really fun thing. Join us in the Epop Cooks Challenge. And again, you can get all the details by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/epopcooks. Guys, thanks so much for joining us today. And if you like what we're doing here with Podcast Gluttony and you want us to continue the 5 shows a week, let us know by subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to this podcast, and also by leaving a rating or review. Today's review comes from BN233 and reads, "Trav is the best. His blog is awesome. His podcast is awesome. Chock full of inspirational stories and tips, whether it's career or travel related. I always find myself learning something new or gaining a new perspective." Wow, if I ever feel down throughout the day, all I have to do is head on over to your reviews and read a few. You guys really, really rock. So thanks, BN233, and thank you everyone for tuning in today. Don't forget about the Epop Cooks Challenge, and until tomorrow, happy free travels.